stretchable band.
Yeah, well, I mean, I use regular Wikipedia. Are you using symbols.wikipedia?
Yeah. Because why would you not want to use
symbols? Well,
I could go up. They can be different sizes.
That sounds dirty.
They're useful when you need to keep two or more items together.
All right.
That's the important part.
Good deal. Welcome to the Live Christianly podcast. My name is Elijah, and what's your name?
It's Dan.
Oh, his name is Dan. And this, like I said, is a Live Christianly podcast, and we'd like to welcome you. This is our first official episode. Technically, I guess it's sort of episode two, but not really.
It's episode one because we titled the first episode episode zero.
And I said
so we are
zero.
Maintaining complete control over the episode numbering
right.
From here on out.
This could be episode 0.5 if we really wanted to.
Yeah, but it's like movies that have the, like Lion King 1.5. That was
it
weird.
It always sucked.
Because it wasn't Lion King.
That's true. It was not Lion King. Hey, Dan, how was your week?
Well, my week was all right. I'm fighting this congestion. That's garbage. But other than that, it's not been bad.
Yep.
Let's see what's going on. So I have a baby. I mentioned that in episode zero. My week, and actually I should say this because it's probably going to have been 6 weeks since our initial recording of the podcast.
Yes.
For those of you who listened to the first podcast, you'll understand.
Yep.
There was a pleasant little interlude. One of us took the time to record for you right in the middle, explaining that. But
it wasn't, it wasn't me.
Yeah, it wasn't you. But that's all right.
That's okay.
I took care of my baby a lot. Because the funny thing is that I'm learning is that babies require a lot of care.
They do.
Kind of a crap load, if you could say that. So that's been good. It's super amazing, and you probably also understand this.
I do.
With your son. It's just super cool to see their developments. And just within the last week... or so. She's really started responsive, like smiling, and trying to make like little noises. Like she can't speak obviously yet, but making noises when we speak to her in response. So that's really neat. It just makes me feel super jazzed. You know, I don't know what jazzed really means, but I assume it's like excited or
it makes you want
thrilled.
To do jazz hands.
That's right. I'm currently doing them.
Can you
those
see
the podcast can see it,
yep.
No doubt.
Yep. Yeah. It's probably that same guy from the last episode who was outside.
Oh, yeah.
Smelling chili.
So that was good. I tried to do a couple of New Year's. New Year's just came. And by the time those of you who are listening will hear this podcast, it'll be a couple weeks away from that probably. But that was pretty sweet. I watched New Year's Celebration on TV. And it was hosted by Pitbull, which was awesome. And by awesome, I mean ridiculous, because that man, oh boy.
Well, actually, this will be the first time I'm hearing about it, because it was just my brother and his wife came over, and we just hung out for, well, you know, maybe 20, 25 minutes of watching the thing. And we couldn't find anything good on, well, we don't have TV, we just have Netflix. And
well, here's the thing, don't mistake what I just said.
That's
being
good.
Something good.
Well, what we got was like some Mexicans. Like it was like a Mexican party, and no joke, like they had Mexican accents.
So a siesta.
Yeah, well, it was a siesta. So we were watching
a fiesta.
They did not sleep. Well, we did sleep afterwards. Yeah, it was a fiesta, and they were all like they all actually had Mexican accents, and so we tuned into this because we thought that it was going to be a live ball drop, and it turns out they did have a live feed from New York City, but it just so happened to be that they were all Mexican, and I don't know why I couldn't find anything else.
Well, that's
not that I hate it. They actually some really really interesting music.
It was from New York City though.
Well, they
was
showed,
it from Mexico City?
I don't know. I think it was just a Mexican party in New York City.
Did you see... It was just a bunch of Mexicans that got together and had a New Year's celebration.
Yeah, and somehow it was on the top of the Google
search.
Was
it Telemundo?
It was ESPN 8, the Ocho.
Oh, okay. Well, that certainly
anyway,
legitimizes it.
Tell me about this Pitbull.
Well, okay, so I have a problem with Pitbull. The problem is that he's annoying, and... So this is funny. I feel like I need to bring this up because I stumbled across this. It was probably earlier this year. And it's a chart that Bloomberg Businessweek put out that displays the how do they put it? It was basically the gist of it was that most rappers are lying about their money. And so you know how on rap tracks, well maybe you don't, I don't know. Are you a hip hopper?
Not really. I did hear that Tupac was the first one, not Tupac, the other one, Jay-Z.
Biggie?
I don't know.
Notorious
B.I.G.? Was it Jay-Z? I think it was Jay-Z. Was the first rapper to make $1 billion? $1 trillion gross?
Could be.
I could just be making that up.
Could be. But the gist of it was, so rappers a lot of times will brag about the amount of money that they make on their tracks because obviously it pumps them up. They're like they're their own hype people. And so I came across this chart from Bloomberg Businessweek. That was showing alleged wealth versus actual wealth. And I'm actually going to show you the chart. We'll link to it in the show notes. But Pitbull actually tops that chart. The lyric defined was this one. It says, I see the future but live for the moment. Makes sense, don't it? Now make dollars, I mean billions. I'm a genius, I mean brilliant. Mm. And so the
profound.
What you see there in the chart there is that the amount of brag that he's actually doing versus the actual wealth that he has, which, interestingly enough, is 9.5 million as compared to the billions he bragged about.
I see in this chart here that Jay-Z is the closest to what he's actually making.
My boy right there, Sean Carter.
Is that his name, Jay-Z? Yes. His name is Sean Carter?
Well, I just call him Sean Z because
he's a friend of the show.
A friend of the show. Mr. Z.
Yep.
So that's not the only issue I have with Pitbull, but I thought that was pretty funny because not only is he annoying, but I have justified reason to be annoyed with him for the fact that he brags about, 9.5 million versus billions. That's like, that's at least, like, that's 100 times less than he's bragging about.
A slight exaggeration.
Yeah. So that was good. We still got to spend some time with friends. Speaking of friends, that's now on Netflix.
So
I know you're a huge fan of Ross and Rachel.
He's a huge friend. I cannot listen to What's-His-Face's voice without seeing the giraffe.
Russ.
From because my wife likes the show. I'm not a big fan, podcast audience. I'll be writing a blog post or playing video games or something, and I'll hear it, and all I picture is the giraffe peeking over, looking at the zebra, and talking about, like, the sink or whatever they talk about in Friends.
That's good. I haven't seen Madagascar in a long time.
Yeah, we should watch.
Yeah, we should do that.
Tell you what, let's pause the podcast and go watch it, and then we will come back. All right, how'd you like it?
Well, it was just as good as I remembered it, which is awesome.
Amazing.
Yeah. But Friends is now on Netflix, and it's funny because I never used to be a huge fan of the show years ago. My wife loves it, her cousins love it, many of her friends love it, and I just never connected with it. I'm going back now and rewatching from the beginning, and I'm noticing that there's an awful lot of sarcasm they use in the show, which I'm a big fan of. I'm a huge fan of the sarcasm. So that's been really cool. I've been listening to way more podcasts on theology and church history, probably than I had time for. But it's so good. I mean, I have a baby to take care of, so I do that.
Listen to some podcasts.
Listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
Do the dishes, listen to podcasts. Yeah. Go to the bathroom, listen to podcasts.
Right, that's why I always have one headphone hanging out of my ear.
In the shower?
In the shower, I actually take we have a Bluetooth speaker, and I put a shower cap over it.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, so I connect my phone to the Bluetooth, and I put my shirt, or whatever. I put my clothes on top of the shirt, on top of the phone, and so that it doesn't get dewy, because that ruined my old phone.
Oh, really?
Well, my old phone. My most recent old phone just died because it did a faceplant on concrete. But before that, what happened was that dew got into it. And so I wrap my shirt around it, and I listen to podcasts in the shower because my Bluetooth speaker has a shower cap.
That's curious. I'm pausing for a moment, realizing it doesn't sound loony at all, I'm sure.
No.
That's good, though. That's what I do. I listen to it in the shower, too. You take what you get when you have a kid. I tried to stay up last night and finish designing the site for my blog, which I've tried to get up on its legs 4 weeks now.
It's a bigpoopy.com, right?
It's no, it's actually not. It's interesting you say that because it was right after a big poopy that I was working on it. Podcast listeners, all right. We apologize for the graphic nature of this episode.
It is now rated M.
But I sat down on the couch thinking, all right, well, Amanda and the baby, they're both in bed. I finally could steal some time. And then at 12:30, I woke up and realized, oh, I fell asleep. And so that's, the rest of yesterday was spent realizing that I can't stay up late anymore. Mm-hmm. So that was depressing.
It's a tough moment. It's like you're being punched in the gut by life.
It really is. It really is. Kind of like how you can't you realize that you can't drive past like 1 a.m. anymore without falling asleep too.
I can't say I have that problem.
Oh, okay. Well, how often have you driven past 1 a.m. recently?
All the time. Never.
Yeah?
No, I think it's been at least a year.
Yeah. So you don't even know. Haven't even realized it.
I don't even.
I've realized
it. I'm not going to do that because that would be dangerous.
Okay, yeah. I don't advise it. last thing I did yesterday, saw Lord of the Rings. Battle of the Five Armies.
I feel like you have to say that in a British accent. Lord of the Rings, Battle of the Five Armies.
They're from New Zealand.
That's okay.
Well, they're not. It was filmed in New Zealand. They're from Middle Earth.
Come on. And Middle Earth people clearly have accents like this. If I spoke like this, would we have more authority in the podcast world? You think? You think I'd be making fun of them? I'm not making. I think my accent is rather good.
I think you can only find out if you try.
I'm not going to do that, actually. I quit already.
It's going to be hard to maintain it for the full episode, is it?
It's very difficult, actually. Yes.
So, that was a pretty amazing movie. I realized Lord of the Rings is clearly the winner of my heart. like, a lot of people are like, cult fans of Star Wars and Star Trek, and I like them, but I think Lord of the Wings.
Oh, we're from Buffalo. Lord of the Chicken Wings.
Oh, Lord of the...
I bet there's probably an award called the Lord of the Wings. Oh, I hope so.
If there's not, we should totally do it. It could be a podcast award. We could go out and eat chicken. Man, this podcast is getting amazing. More and more amazinger by the second.
More and more amazinger. And we can award people the Lord of the Wings.
So, that was good. I said this to you earlier today, but I'll say it to the podcast listeners, that it's not often that you find a movie that has that amount of meaning behind it, along with adventure and peril and death and love and romance and adventure and peril.
Dragons.
And dragons.
And hobbits.
Also, friendship. There's some really cool scenes that like test the character of the characters personally, and that was really sweet to watch. I love it. It's the total package in my eyes.
Complete package.
And in my ears.
I haven't even seen the third one yet, I don't think. I've seen the first two.
First two were good.
Yeah. The third one, though?
Third one.
If you take the first two.
I mean, you should watch, really, all of them together.
Yes. That would probably take a day.
We should do that.
We should do that.
I told...
Let's eat chicken wings.
Oh. And watch podcast. And that would be amazing. We could do, like, we'll live tweet it.
That's a good way to lose followers, just tweeting about the minute details of Lord of the Rings for a full day.
Especially once you get to the first three movies that everyone's seen.
Yeah.
Like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, wow, that one has a really big foot.
It's so hairy.
# hairy foot.
Hairy foot.
Ew.
So enough about me. What? How was your week, Elijah?
My week was pretty good. I think 2 weekends ago or a weekend ago when GameStop had their buy two get one free video games. That was sweet. I actually ended up going to the mall and to the regular video game GameStop store because they did not have what I wanted at the mall. So I ended up getting a new Super Mario Brothers for the Wii U. I got another Mario game, the Super Mario 3D World. It's very similar. Anyway, that's not what this podcast is about. And I also got Zelda Hyrule Warriors, which I originally went into it thinking it wasn't going to be that great because I wasn't a huge fan of Dynasty Warriors and Dynasty Warriors plus Zelda. I was like, they're just going to use the characters, but it's actually really good.
Yeah, you seemed a bit skeptical.
I did. I was quite skeptical. I was just like, well, it's a Zelda game and it's for the system I own, so I'm just going to buy it. But, you know, I usually I wanted the two Mario games, and I figured I got the third one for free. But it actually turns out that that's the one that I like the best so far.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. So, podcast audience, play that game if you, or you can just come over and hang out with me, and we can play it because it's actually two player.
So that's cool too. Wait, you're gonna invite them over to play the game with you, but you haven't even invited me.
Yeah, Dan, you can stay there, and then I'll go play the games. Keep recording this podcast.
Maybe I'll go hang out with the guy outside from last episode who smelled the chili.
Who's still outside waiting for the chili?
Okay.
But yeah. Okay. So also, I've been researching a lot of what's called annihilationism. It's a position on hell that is contrary to the traditional doctrine of eternal conscious torment. One of these days, I would like to do an episode on this because it's actually pretty cool. I've been doing a lot of research on that. If you follow my blog, which is elijaht.wordpress.com.
Wait, spell it.
E-L-I-J-I-A-H-T. Yeah.
Thanks, Mom.
Thanks, Mom. If you follow there, I actually just posted on Friday a podcast. It was a blog post about a podcast saying that you should listen to Rethinking Hell. It's a podcast from the conditionalist perspective. Conditionalist is an abbreviative form of, is that a word, abbreviative? It's an abbreviated form of conditional immortality.
I'll get down with new words.
Yes. Yeah. Abbreviative. So yeah, anyway, listen to that show if you're interested in conditionalism, conditional immortality, annihilationism. I will be writing a blog post. Hopefully it's going to go up on Monday about that.
That'll be good. I look forward to that.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of excited because then that means I'm putting myself out on this one particular thing that puts me in a very tiny minority within the Christian community, and that's okay. Because apparently there's a big wave right now going on of lots of evangelicals embracing annihilationism, which I think is super cool because I don't like the doctrine of eternal conscious torment. But that's not why I'm rejecting it. I'm rejecting it because the Bible, I think, clearly says things like, you know, John 3:16, you will perish. I mean, what the heck? The word perish is pretty clear. And granted, it wasn't in English. It was in Koine Greek. But in Koine Greek was the common language. Okay, I'm not going to get on with that.
Save it.
Yeah, save it for later. Yeah, so needless to say, I've been researching that. And there's actually been a lot of other stuff going on within the blogosphere, too, that I've been kind of paying attention to. One of the things being that about, right before Christmas, Rob Bell had, he recently got a show on the Oprah Winfrey Network, which is fantastic.
That's fun.
Yeah, for those of you guys who do not know, Rob Bell is the, I don't think he actually came out as a universalist, but he has been accused of being a universalist. What he does is he just asks a lot of questions about hell, and a lot of them will kind of, you know, they'll poke at the traditional view of hell. We actually watched that one movie. Dang it. What's the name of that movie? I texted you about this.
It was just the other day.
Yeah.
So I was clearly paying attention when you texted me.
Right. Whatever it was called.
Oh, no, you figured it out on your own. You didn't even tell me.
I did figure it out on my own.
So I can't be blamed for any of this right now.
No, you know what you can do, though? I can just real quick jump into my blog here and go to...
Well, I'll tell you, while you're doing that, one of the things that happened with Rob Bell, it's probably like a little over three years ago, I'm going to guess, maybe four, I don't remember, it's time tends to just kind of blend together, but it was right after he had put out his
Hellbound,
his book. Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
What was it?
Continue.
Was it Love Wins? Is that what it was?
That was his book, yeah.
And so he received a lot of flack for that because he was asking some questions that... really rivaled traditional evangelical views on hell and, you know, positions that a lot of the church, including probably largely ours and other Baptist churches too, wouldn't necessarily agree with. And so he was immediately, and this kind of frustrated me when it happened, but written off by a lot of people, the primary of which that got a lot of attention was John Piper, tweeted something immediately after it, saying farewell, Rob Bell.
Oh yeah,
and basically he got denounced almost in a heretical fashion immediately. And so I, you can go on about how
yeah. So anyway, we watched Hellbound a while back, and it was essentially a chat with people on the traditionalist side and people on the universalist side, which they interviewed Rob Bell as the universalist ish. Perspective, but he never actually came out and said that he was a universalist because he just asked a lot of questions, which is, that's perfectly fine. I'm a big fan of questions. I remember Mark Driscoll wasn't a huge fan of that. He said something like, there are a lot of people who come out and ask questions and are too much of a coward to provide answers. Okay, Mark Driscoll, that's fine.
That in and of itself is an entirely different path we can walk down on another day.
Yeah, never mind, I'm not going to bring that up. Anyway, so Rob Bell being on the Oprah Winfrey Network, I've noticed he speaks, well, actually, you noticed this, he speaks in a lot of vague terminology.
Right.
He actually had an interview with Oprah a while back. They posted it on YouTube on November 3rd in 2013, so it's quite some time ago. It's called Oprah Goes Soul to Soul with Rob Bell, Super Soul Sunday.
Is that what? That's what was they actually called it?
That's what this is called, the Super Soul Sunday. and so
I love punny names.
I know. Actually,
I'm shaking my head no right now.
The dude from The Office, Dwight Schrute.
Yeah.
He's actually a major part of something similar to this.
Yeah, Soul Pancake.
Soul Pancake.
That's
a
great site. That's a lot of fun to read.
Yeah, this is not so great.
Okay.
This is Oprah talking to Rob Bell. And actually, I have a little something funny for you here. Here is Oprah asking questions with Rob Bell. Is Super Soul Sunday, Soul to Soul, exploring the big questions.
All right, here
Rob
we go.
Bell.
Okay, what is the soul? It's the thing that keeps telling you there's more. There's more. There's more. This isn't just a meal. This isn't just a person. This isn't just an embrace. This isn't just an interview.
All right, so thanks, Rob Bell. What is the soul? There's a lot that could be said, but he doesn't really say anything. It reminds me of this YouTube video is going around maybe, what do you think, a year ago or something like that. Yeah. And it was The Meaning of Life from a Crazy Person is the name of the of the video. And so, Rob Bell, what is the soul?
Live in the moment. Don't get old. Don't judge people. Because you can't be free if you judge people. Love now.
Create!
Inspire!
Damn.
It sounded similar to like a Braveheart speech at the beginning of a battle up until that very moment.
Up until when he farts. Yeah. He didn't actually fart, if those of you guys who haven't seen it, he actually just makes the farty noise. With his mouth, yeah. The main point that I wanted to bring up with this is that it sounds a lot like what Daniel Dennett calls a deepity. And for those of you guys who are not familiar with Daniel Dennett, he's one of the, what people call the four horsemen of atheism, in complete with, you know, three other people that, you know, Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and whoever it is going to kill me. You know, Christopher Hitchens.
Friend of the show.
So, anyway, so very briefly, this is Daniel Dennett on what is a deepity.
A deepity is an apparently profound observation that is ambiguous. And I mean that quite literally. It has two readings. On one reading, it's obviously false. But if it were true, it would be very important. And on the other, it's trivially true. And so when you hear it, you sort of see, ooh, I think that's true. It is. It's trivially true. Or at the same time, whoa, that's a deepity.
That is a deepity. And I feel as though, and this is not a shot against Rob Bell as a person, but I think he is appealing largely to those people who think in those ways, where it's like, well, you know, Deepak Chopra, Eckhart Tolle, and the spiritual-minded type of people where they don't really say things, but they say things. There was a guy who I used to work with. He interacted with a girl who I used to work with, too, and she would be very into these deepities. And she practiced, like, the spiritual side of yoga, not just twisting your body in funny shapes, but actually, like, the spiritual kind of, you know...
Right, right.
Channeling your chakra up through the middle and out your mouth or whatever it is. Nothing against yoga, because I actually like yoga. Some yoga positions are actually kind of really, really interesting.
They're very freeing and
it's true.
Limbering.
Yeah. But
spoken as one who does relatively little yoga. And
but
it shows.
The one yoga I did.
I like frozen yoga.
Shut up. Anyway, so he said... the soft footsteps of your, the soft rose petals of your footsteps are falling gently on my inner sanctum. And I was like, that's fantastic, because it means nothing. And it, like what Daniel Dennett was saying, if it's true, then it's really profound. But it doesn't actually mean anything. So it's, if true at all, it's trivially true.
Right.
Based on what those words even mean. But anyway, yeah, so I think it's going to be interesting with Rob Bell being on Oprah Winfrey Network based on who she is, what the kind of shows she puts out, and what kind of stuff Rob Bell has been getting into. And I'm actually sort of looking forward to it, not because I'm looking forward to Rob Bell kind of tumbling off the deep end, because I wish he would stop being so weird, but if he's going to be weird, he might as well put it on the Oprah Winfrey Network and associate himself with that sort of thing. Anyway.
Well, I heard something the other day from someone online who had made a comment that I thought was really good regarding that, and that the audience that, and this is what you were just saying here, too, I think the audience that he's appealing to, he largely, whether or not he speaks in deepities, it's an audience that still needs to hear the gospel, and needs to hear about Christ. And so if there's anything that can be added to that, and I don't know that I would go toe-to-toe theologically with everything he has to offer, but
right.
But he's still offering good conversation and bringing up things about Christ in an environment where it probably largely would not exist
anyway. Yeah, well, so I mean...
That's like the negative... any attention is good attention, even if it's negative attention, that kind of argument. This, so I don't know if I fully agree with that.
Yeah, it may not even be necessarily negative attention, because a lot of people within the Oprah Winfrey crowd, they kind of, they're what many people call postmoderns, and they, at least when it comes to religious perspectives, they think that there's no such thing as truth in that area. If they were to say there's no such thing as truth anywhere, then that would just be obviously self-defeating. But if it, what they say is, like, religion is in the same realm as some other opinions that cannot be proven. And so it's, I think a lot of people who are listening to Oprah Winfrey and Deepak Chopra and all them they appreciate that other people believe certain things, but because it's just an opinion, it doesn't really make too much of a difference. I'm hoping that Rob Bell says something that actually stirs other people to think, hey, maybe Jesus is actually legit, or something like that, is more than what a lot of people say that he is.
Right.
And help them, you know, they start looking into it or something. That's my hope. But, you know, I guess we'll see. Anyway, so there's been a lot of criticism of Rob Bell as of lately, but there's actually a decent amount of criticism of the church in general. I think kind of, as you were saying before the show, it goes back and forth from you guys are acting too old and not changing, or you guys are acting too young and keep changing. And there's an interesting article that I think, did I send it to you or did you send it to me?
Well, you sent it to me, but it was within probably like 3 minutes of it having popped up in my own timeline. Mm-hmm. And we actually posted the article on our Twitter feed this week. It's from churchplants.com, and we'll link to it in the show notes as well. But it's interesting because whenever I see, I've been following like church culture pretty, I don't know if aggressively is the right word. that makes me sound really like battle-oriented. Yeah. But I've been following it pretty religiously, no pun intended, for several years, where I just kind of want to see where the church is going, what sort of things are changing. Like we mentioned last episode, I lead the worship, so a lot of that is just wanting to know, you know, what are trends, what are things I should be looking out for, that sort of thing. So I'd actually seen the article, and you sent it to me too, but it was from churchplants.com, and it says, "Dear Church, here's why people are really leaving you." And so, having followed church culture for a few years, I tend to dislike these articles pretty adamantly because, I read a lot, like, especially in worship music a couple of years ago, there's a huge uproar of, like, hymns versus choruses and different styles and just stuff that really disgusts me as far as arguments that people choose to pursue within the church itself. Stuff that you really like. It's so secondary mm-hmm. compared to why you're actually should be there. I know people just complaining about, you know, how churches are.
Set I just up. Spilled water on myself. I figured. Anyway, now that I'm done being an infant. Continue.
So people have problems with how, you know, there's bands up front leading the church, and how, you know, there's a focus on professionalism and doing things well. You know, if we're going to do them for God, and volume, music choice, and a lot of these are like they're reasonable things to bring up, but they don't have to be half as big of a deal as people make them into. So, with this article, it came from a pretty decent perspective on church plants from John Pavlovitz. Pardon me, John, if I pronounced your name incorrectly. But
it's actually Smith.
That's a weird way to spell Smith. But he goes through several different points, a couple of which I think are pretty good and really, I think resonate with me where I'm at right now. One of the first points he makes is that to the church, that your Sunday productions have worn thin. And I think that within church culture, that's a big thing right now being talked about, is because several years ago, there was a swing in people who complained that the church wasn't relevant enough, to use that term, as those people did. And so it became church became a place that was about, you know, kind of a rocky style of music. You know, they really made it seem, or really made it more comfortable for those who, you know, are with culture where it is right now, secular culture. And so, but he says, your Sunday productions have worn thin, and the one thing he mentions in there is that, I'm just going to quote it, the stage and the lights and the bands and the video screens have all just become white noise to those really seeking to encounter God. They're ear and eye candy for an hour, but they have so little relevance in people's daily lives, and more of them are taking a pass. And so I think that's something, that's a good point that we have to be careful of. And I'm not sure that that in all churches that's the case, where it's just a production. I know in ours, we really work hard to make it not a production and not about those that are up front leading and not necessarily putting the focus on us, but those are some good points, is that if people are there to encounter God, is this something that is getting in the way, or is it something that's helping? Because that's what church is about anyway. It's not about the, and I said that last episode in the introduction to just myself, is that that's one of the things that I'm questioning right now too, is what is the importance of personal faith and where it meets, you know, church and church culture and mm-hmm. That sort of thing.
Sure.
So he also goes on to say, in the second point, that we speak in a foreign tongue. And the quote I pulled from that is just that people don't need to be dazzled with big churchy words and about
eschatological.
Thank you. I'll blame it on my congestion.
All right.
Yeah, okay. Frameworks and theological systems. Talk to them plainly about love and joy and forgiveness and death and peace and God, and they'll be all ears. Keep up the church speak, and you'll be talking to an empty room soon. And so part of me, having grown up in an evangelical church, that instantly strikes a nerve, because I feel like so much emphasis was placed on, you know, looking the part of church.
Oh.
You know. And so being, yeah, well, rapture too. But, but I was thinking more along the lines of you had to kind of fit a certain mold to really fit into the church. And so that involved the way you speak and the way you dress. And I think that the church now has really simplified things, is that they want to make the gospel very presentable to the world. But some of that, I fear, has come at the expense of, like, they almost strip away things that actually do matter
yep.
for the sake of simplifying it. And so I think that's a good point that you make, that or that he makes.
You can give me credit.
Mr. Smith. That's a good point that he makes, that we need to be careful about speaking in a foreign tongue and in a way that people can understand. But we shouldn't be so willing to oversimplify church in our trying to understand God. Because I think that's the other problem, is that what people are finding when they come to God now, and they may be relatively disappointed because we're not giving them something deep and something that's going to help them really, to push them into a closer relationship and understanding of God, and a way that we can experience Him beyond just, you know, shows and stage presence and that sort of thing.
I will have to admit that when I, because I grew up going to church-ish, it was more like I lived next door to a church for a few years, so I just went there every once in a while, but it was always really confusing when I heard people say random churchy things that I didn't know what the heck they were talking about, and it reminds me of that YouTube video, Shoot Christians Say, and it's like, how's your walk, and things like that, where if you're not a part of the Christian culture, you're like, how's my walk? I mean, fine,
I have a pretty standard gait.
I know, I have a bit of a limp today, I suppose, because I stubbed my toe on my coffee table, but I mean, obviously, how's your walk is like, how is your relationship, things like that,
right.
How is your Bible reading, so why don't they just ask these straight up questions? If, as me, as an outsider coming in, and I'm like, I believe this stuff because Jesus, I want to be a part of a conversation with you guys, but you guys are talking beyond me because I don't know what these words mean.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a couple of churches that I was at where they actually, the entire time I was not able to follow what they were saying because of that. And I think that the article makes a pretty interesting point regarding that.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely the emphasis that he's making there. Same with the other points he makes about the vision of the church not seeing past the building and being willing to look outside the four walls and kind of being wrapped up in itself. Choosing lousy battles. I mean, we talked about that a little bit in the first episode, how churches more recently wanted to pick battles over movies where biblical interpretation or interpretations of biblical stories where just and you know, the church often makes itself look rather foolish with how uproarious it gets over things that really have relatively little consequence.
Yeah.
So, and the last point that he makes is how our love doesn't look like love. And I think that's conditional love that is seen in a lot of places and experienced in a lot of places where, I'll go off on a sidebar for a second. And one of the things that has irked me, you like that? The word irked? That's a good slip in there.
Steve Urkel.
Irk. Word of the day. We should make that the word of the day. Irk.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I like the other word of the day.
Okay.
We have a word of the day planned.
All right. We'll tell you later.
Yeah.
We'll clue you in.
Irked is number one. This other one is number two.
Continue. So, but how our love doesn't look like love, and that one of the things that I feel like in the culture I grew up with in church, emphasis was placed on having relationships with other people that were there specifically, or that we had specifically to lead to opportunities to witness or to share our faith, and I think that's good. It's good to be willing to share your faith with other people, but the main reason that you have relationships with other people isn't just to share your faith. Like, that shouldn't be the only reason you want to help other people and serve other people and love other people and do things for other people in a selfless manner, is because, you know, maybe I can tell them about Jesus.
Yeah, it makes it almost seem like the friendships that you're making are shallow because you have ulterior motives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's good. That's important. I think that's what number five really speaks to an extent, is that, you know, our love shouldn't be conditional. It should be, you know, unconditional to everyone around us. And that sometimes that's hard love. That's like when a thought that is imprinted in my mind is that when Osama bin Laden was killed, or when the SEAL team went and kind of invaded, and then everyone was like cheering on the death of Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, it was weird.
And there's really negative emotions obviously tied to him as a figure, and admittedly being behind the September 11th attacks. But at the same time, you should feel bad as a Christian calling for the death of another human being, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's still not love. Love would want to look past that and want to still see what's best happened for that person. you know, in sure. light of coming to God. And so so that was good. There's the one thing that does kind of bother me a little bit about this article and all the other articles like this is they really they just speak to how consumer driven church is. You know, regardless of, you know, some of these points are really good points, but many churches have become a place where people just shop around until they find the one that they like based on their own individual preferences and needs. Mm-hmm. And it's not really as much about the experience and the community of people there. I'll take 2 more minutes. I asked for 2 more minutes. Just because that I think that kind of speaks to another article that I saw from relevantmagazine.com this past week. And actually, I came across it in my Facebook news feed about the wrong way to criticize the church. And I'm connected with a number of individuals online. You know, one of the ones that I would use as an example is Stuff Christian Culture Likes, which I stumbled upon a few years ago. And they can be fairly critical of the church, but a lot of times I find that the things that they have to say are really, although really pointed, they're really pretty accurate in questions that the church should be and maybe isn't asking itself. And so this article on relevantmagazine.com just had a couple points about how we should go about criticizing the church. You know, don't ignore that you're part of the problem when you do that. You know, as long as the church is made up of sinners in need of grace, you know, we're going to have issues and we need to mature still and, you know, use wise, careful voices to speak to our issues, you know, and don't forget to examine your own motives, you know. And so I was bothered a little bit by some people's responses to that because one of the things that was said in there, it says, I don't think what the world needs most from the evangelical subculture is an upcoming generation of young adults who are by nature suspicious of tradition, critical of structures, and bent against authority and very vocal about it. And the article kind of puts criticizing the church in a really negative light. And I agree that you shouldn't just go around being negative all the time about the church. That's kind of defeatist, you know?
Yep.
It doesn't really accomplish much. But one of the things that it seemed to point to was that in order to criticize, you should have, you know how maybe your parents said this to you when you were younger, is don't just complain, you know, you have like a solution to it or something. Like, I don't know if your parents said that. But like,
you know, I mean, I know maybe you've heard of, stuff.
Yeah. So don't just complain about it, you know, come up with an answer for it. Right. I hear it at work, you know, and so, I'm not a fan of that personally when it comes to the church. Obviously, I think, like that article said, that you shouldn't just be complaining for the sake of complaining and, you know, shouldn't just be so bent against the church that that's all you're doing. But at the same time, that comes from the presupposition that people should be individually solving the church's problems on their own, which is something that I don't believe denominations have been able to do as a whole for centuries, before they critique something about the church that is wrong or shouldn't be the way it is.
Right.
And so that was kind of that bothered me a little bit because there was a couple people who responded to it, basically indicating that, you know, as individuals, you know, people shouldn't assume that they have any, you know, any real good perspective to speak to the global church history as a whole. And it bothers me because that means that what you're doing is you're making the church not about the people, but about the institution.
Yeah.
And it's made up of the people. That is the church.
Right.
And then all you're doing is you're saying that, you know, you don't have anything really good to say, and just belittling their perspective as individuals, which should not be what the church is really about.
And after all, like, I mean, what other perspective do we have other than our perspective? I mean, granted, we can inform our perspective based on, you know, studying church history and things like that and asking other people, but at the end of the day, our perspective is our perspective. So whether or not, you know, one tiny little criticism of our church mm-hmm. here locally may not apply to the larger church in general, there is a bit of a discussion going on about how the whole church interacts with certain things. I mean, after all, that's right. Why we're doing this podcast, because we've noticed that it's not just our church. I think in general, our church, the people within our local church, are actually fairly decent at thinking about things. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the larger church, the capital C church, I would imagine, yes. Those are the people who we want to talk to, who we want to help, who we want to, you know, change for the better. I mean, after all, we're all in this together, to use a catchphrase.
And that's obviously not, you know, we approach that from a position of humility, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The article.
We are.
We are, like Paul, we're the chief of sinners. And
yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we have our own issues. But the church is supposed to be, it says in the Bible, it's supposed to be salt and light. But the salt and light aren't, like, they're not internal things to the church. That's what it is to the world. Mm-hmm. And so, like, if you see an issue with how the church is being salt and light to the world, then you'd better criticize it, because mm-hmm. something needs to be done. If nothing gets said about problems that we have, then, you know, I'm not going to, if I see poop on your face before you leave the house in the morning, I'm not going to be, hey, like, I'm not going to let you walk out the door like that. I'm going to criticize the poop on your face.
Thank you.
So you wipe it off.
I appreciate that. But I mean,
ask you how you got poop on your face.
Well, I have an infant. Come on.
There you go.
It should be fairly obvious. But I think one of the interesting things is that we could be wrong. The people who are criticizing the church could be wrong. They could just have a very narrow perspective on this stuff. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then people can just point to the fact that they're wrong and say, oh, sorry, it's your particular experience, but it's not the experience of everyone else.
Right. And even if it is wrong, it's good to take the opinion that they have and bring it in and sift it.
Yep.
And say, is there anything we can do better?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, you never want to walk away from, you know, something someone has to offer you.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But yeah, should we take a second maybe and,
Hear
a word from our sponsors.
Word from our sponsors. Yeah, it's not actually our sponsors. This is the Merriam-Webster Dictionary Online. And the word of the day is not whatever you said it was.
Yeah, irked.
Irked, yeah. That's not good enough. This one is here we go.
Peremptory.
Yeah, peremptory.
Peremptory.
They always pronounce it so much better than I do.
Peremptory. Peremptory. Yeah, so the meaning of that is barring a right action, debate, or delay, expressive of urgency or command, and the third definition is marked by arrogant self-assurance or haughty. Needless to say, we are very... Come on.
Peremptory.
So the word from our sponsors is peremptory.
Yes, from our pretend sponsors that are not actually sponsoring our show.
Nice.
And now... the next thing that I would like to cover very briefly, because I actually don't know. I forgot to set a timer before we started this.
Yeah.
That's okay.
It's all right. It went off during the podcast last time.
I pretty scared the crap out of me. That's right. The last thing I wanted to cover here from was an article that we tweeted out from Eric Metaxas in the New York Times. He did...
Friend of the show,
hopefully. He wrote an article on... science pointing to, the title is Science Increasingly Makes the Case for God. And for those of you guys who are at least familiar with apologetics, it's the basic thing behind it is that it's a fine-tuning argument. And actually, I found this video that very briefly, within a minute, I think, explains the fine-tuning argument by one of the main proponents, which is William Lane Craig. So this is actually Bobby Conway, who is a guy who started something called the One-Minute Apologist. And I found this video while you were talking. You don't even know about this, Dan.
I was not even aware.
You were not. So I'm hearing
this with you, the listener. For the first time.
And I'm hearing this probably for like the eighth time because I used it in my apologetics class. But anyway, here is the fine-tuning argument for the existence of God.
Here's two curious questions. We've been talking
this
about
the
some
intro.
Of the different arguments
there
for the existence of God.
Nice intro,
what is
Thanks.
The argument from fine-tuning?
The argument from fine-tuning is a version of the argument for design that appeals not to biological examples of design, but to the initial conditions of the universe that are put in at the beginning of the universe in the Big Bang itself. And this argument can be simply summarized in three steps. Premise one, the fine-tuning of the universe for intelligent life is due to either physical necessity, chance, or design. Premise two is it is not due to physical necessity or chance. And here you would present arguments to disqualify those two alternatives. Three, therefore, it is due to design. So this argument, if successful, gives us a cosmic designer of the laws of nature and of the universe.
So yeah, that's the very, very basic overview of what has been called the fine-tuning argument. And I'm not going to, obviously, I'm not going to go through, well, I mean, I guess I could, but I'm not going to, not obviously, but I'm not going to go through all the reasons to think it is not chance, not design. I mean, not design, not chance, not physical necessity, but it is design. There are reasons for that, and I would suggest looking up actually pretty much anything by William Lane Craig, or just Google the fine-tuning argument, and if you come up with a criticism, read that, and it's probably not so great, although there are actually some decent ones. Anyway, this article was called Science Increasingly Makes the Case for God, and it is the fine-tuning argument. Metaxas, I mean, granted, it is for the New York Times, so it's not going to be as straightforward and logically and, you know, logically set up and as, well, boring, I guess, as that brief little video there was.
It's not going to have all the details that could possibly be included and played out.
Right, and so what he does, he basically just talks very briefly about certain things, how if the strong nuclear force and electromagnetic force have been off for the tiniest fraction of the tiniest fraction, even by one part in one, like, is it billion, trillion, million, quadrillion, something like that, then no stars could have ever been formed at all. And basically, the point that he's making is that these things are so ridiculously improbable that it wouldn't have happened unless it was by design. He doesn't really go out so and say that exactly, but he makes that point. And I think it's a fairly decent argument. I think it's at least something worth thinking about. He got 100, probably thousands of responses all over the blogosphere, but there were two that I thought were interesting. One was from thecatholicthing.org, The Catholic Thing. It was you guys actually may know if you're into apologetics or Christian philosophy. Frank Beckwith, he wrote something up, and also somebody named Rabbi Jeffrey A. Mittleman. I think that's what it is, on the Huffington Post, called Sorry, Science Doesn't Make the Case for God, but that's okay. So the Huffington Post sort of, they give them a little bit of pushback, and ultimately I think the Huffington Post kind of does it in a not-so-great way, because they sort of, they try to put science in one hand and faith on the other, and it's fairly typical that a lot of people will say that faith is the opposite of reason and things like that. And back when I first started exploring this idea, as I thought it was just sort of a straw man that a lot of the atheists were putting up. They were saying, oh, faith is the opposite of reason. But our buddy Joel Osteen, friend of the show Joel Osteen, and other people will actually say that. They will come straight out and just say, yes, faith is the opposite of reason. And I don't think that's a proper approach. This could probably be an entire show, or at least a segment of a show in and of itself.
Mark that down.
Yeah.
Future episode.
Rain check. But I think very briefly, if you say that you have faith in something, just think about what that means. I have faith in my spouse. Does that mean it's against reason? I think if I were to say to Beth, if I were to say, hey, I have faith in you, or to a friend, I have faith in you, if faith meant I have no reason to think you're going to be doing that, that's almost like an insult. Mm-hmm. So I don't personally understand how people can say that faith is the opposite of reason. I don't get it, but they say it in the Huffington Post article. But the Catholic Thing, Frank Beckwith, actually has an interesting idea on there. We'll link these several things in the show notes. Beckwith is sort of saying that the fine-tuning argument could be falsified, therefore we probably shouldn't use it. But my question is, well, why shouldn't we? His point was that, based on our information that we have currently, yes, the universe does seem very finely tuned. And to him, I guess that seems okay. But what he's trying to say is that God is a metaphysical question rather than a physical question, and this is dealing with physical things. It's dealing with the universe. My question is, why not? If we're looking at the information that we currently have and coming up with the best possible conclusion, why is it bad to conclude that God or the design may have been it, maybe the explanation. To me, it doesn't make sense to say that we just should avoid it because it's potentially falsifiable. In fact, I think it's a cool part about this argument is that if it turns out to be falsifiable, then there's one hypothesis or one argument for God that's falsifiable, and we can point to that and say, hey, that's falsifiable. Because that's one of the main criticisms that a lot of atheists and stuff like skeptics will put up against Christianity is that we make unfalsifiable claims. So at the end of the day, I think if this argument ends up being false, then fine. We'll just admit it and say, well, it was totally reasonable at the time, given the information that we had. But just because we have information and we have a reasonable conclusion, I don't see why we have to avoid making that conclusion. Anyway, I liked the Metaxas article. He's a much better writer than I am, I think. He has some experience. Yeah, he actually just wrote a book called Miracles, I think.
I have that on my Amazon wish list right now.
I've been told it was good by a lot of fellow book
readers. Well, his book on Bonhoeffer was very good. I don't know if you've read that.
It's a really big book, right?
Yeah, Joe just read that book.
Yeah, I have not read that.
Yeah, it's long. It actually took him a year. He told me to read it from cover to cover. it's quite encyclopedic thick.
Yeah.
So, but very good. I can't say that I read it because I listened to most of it. I listened to it on audiobook, audible.com. By the way, Audible, if you're interested in sponsoring our podcast.
I believe audible.com/LCpod is open. So we have readers. Listeners who are readers. See? Readers who are listeners.
Right there.
There it is.
That's good, though. I appreciated when I saw that article that it's definitely good to try and prove the existence of God with the information that we have. But at the same time, remember to, you know, check ourselves on the fact that really it is about the faith, you know.
Right.
You know, there's an element of faith that we have to have. And I think that sometimes, and you could probably attest to this with some of the people you interact with online too, is that sometimes that just gets forgotten in the face of looking for evidence alone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can have apologetics arguments that just go on forever and ever. Actually, I haven't read it, but there was an interesting article that had an interesting title. I hadn't read it, but it said, "Has studying the Bible made us incapable of reading it?" And I think that seems like an interesting thing, because usually those go hand in hand, but not necessarily. So in apologetics, there's a lot of defending the faith and trying to discover what's true and things like that, which is a great endeavor. But at the same time, it's not necessarily the only thing we should be looking for, because ultimately there's more to life than just facts in reality. I mean, obviously reality is important and facts are important, but that in and of itself, there's more to it than that. There's relationships and things like that. But yeah, so that is actually all we have for you guys this week, those things that we wanted to talk about here.
Which I think is rather extensive.
Yeah.
I think we overestimate our ability to talk.
I think you're probably right. We had three things in a document here that's like, oh, we'll just talk about that.
We may have to cut it back.
What is it, like an hour? Yeah. I don't even know where we're at right now.
I don't know.
Forgive us.
But hey, good news. Since we're wrapping things up, let's let our listeners know what we have this week in food.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, that's a thing.
That is a thing. This week in food, brought to you by the recipe on the back of the box, because we haven't had any suggestions otherwise.
Well, because we haven't posted a podcast
yet. Well, that'll happen,
I guess.
Yeah. Eventually, it'll happen. So what did we make, Dan?
Oh, yeah, we made some chicken pad thai, fried rice, and steamed vegetables. Mm. That was delicious.
Carbo loading for tomorrow.
It's for worship?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of late people Saturday to night. Talk to or
yeah,
something.
Stuff. A lot of working out, you know.
But I actually really enjoyed the chicken pad thai. I had never made any Thai food before, so that was actually super cool.
Yeah, neither did I.
And I had
another
walk.
Another experience. Yeah, you do have a walk.
I do.
And it's another experience on the road to me learning how to cook relatively fluently.
I'm excited for you.
Or at least capably.
Yes.
Even
yes,
if
indeed.
Not fluent.
All right, well, in closing, I just want to remind you guys that if you want to contact us, follow us on Live Christianly. Our goal is to be posting articles throughout the week that we're probably going to be talking about on the podcast. Odds are we'll post more than we will be covering here, considering all we did was cover three articles and it's an hour. But yeah, so I think a lot of what we're posting is things that are relevant to us now, but they deal with topics that are more than just
weekly
things. Yeah, bigger picture stuff. So I think that gives it gives us a lot of stuff to talk about. And if you have thoughts on it, feel free to tweet at us. I mean, we're pretty much checking that thing every day, all day. We both get push notifications. So if you tweet at us, we will hear you.
Yep. Comments, questions, topic suggestions are nice. Meal suggestions, ideas are good. Our wives will enjoy if you now. I guess we got to say keep it within reason, because I don't know how rare the cut of steak we could afford.
Bro, yeah. And I'm not eating dog. I'm just not gonna eat dog.
Right. So if you send us any of those comments, questions, that sort of thing, topics, make sure to include hashtag LCPod. That's LC, the initials of Live Christianly Pod, on Twitter. So yeah. I guess wrapping it up, just to remind you, we don't have all the answers, but we always ask the questions and absolutely welcome the conversation along the way as we talk about what it means to live Christianly.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.